For September the 23rd, 2022, we talk about Rocksmith Plus, Fallout 76 Expeditions, The Pit, Timberborn, and much more. Welcome to Level 429. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are back. 2 weeks in a row, baby.
Back.
Oh, man.
Did you miss us?
Hopefully it was just the right amount of time. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. It is hard to miss a show when it is gone for the exact time that it is usually gone, which is 1 week. I think any more would be a little much.
Yeah, you know, speak for yourself.
Okay.
I like how long. You know, you got to keep the mystery going.
You do. Yeah. So I'm just going to throw to one of us randomly. How's it going, Dennis? What you been up to?
It's going good. I'm fighting a little bit of sunburn because I was outside all weekend. Got to go to Kings Island, the local theme park, which also is one of the best for roller coasters in the nation. And my oldest is finally big enough to ride all those roller coasters that it's known for. So I spent more time on a roller coaster in this past weekend than I think I have in the past 10 years combined.
Hmm.
But it was fun. It was a good time. We were talking before we went on air, like my relationship with, G-forces and nausea has aged pretty well, at least so far. So, mm-hmm. So I, you know, could do it and enjoy it. Was not suffering, to entertain the kiddos. And yeah, it was a good time.
Nice. I'm happy to hear it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. David, how about you? What's going on?
You know, just kind of continuing on. I've just been taking it easy. Nothing too significant.
Cool.
You've only made about 60 new outfits since we last talked. I understand.
You know,
slow week.
Yeah, as you do. So, I'm learning bag and pouch making right now is my big thing I'm getting into. So
okay. Nice. Start up a side hustle on Etsy, making dice bags for people.
Exactly.
Ooh. Yeah.
I just know people do that. I've had, if I had a reason to have them, there's an amazing set of dice bags of Mountain Goats lyrics based on D&D alignments.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's just I forget what it is, but like neutral evils. Like, I hope you die. I hope we both die. Stuff like that. I like the neutral good one, because neutral good is a very good alignment in my moral system. It's lyrics from I believe it's from Tallahassee or Sunset Tree, which is real good. And then they have one for like lawful or just a chaotic stupid. on there, which says it was a bad idea to buy acid. It was an even worse idea to try to buy acid from a cop. God, the Mountain Goats rules. We're coming up on 10 years since Transcendental Youth came out, which to me is the new Mountain Goats album. So dealing with that, processing that.
Yep.
Yeah. Ben, how about you? What's going on?
Well, I'll tangent from the time moving fast part. Like 2 weeks ago when I was at a wedding, I was with my high school friends and we realized that we graduated high school half of our life ago.
Oh,
and
yeah?
That kind of made your gray hair stand up on end, you know?
Yeah, don't do that to me. Oh my God.
Sorry. But I don't know. And happier news, I got to see the OCs play in Seattle this last week. And that was a lot of fun.
Original characters?
They spell their name a bunch of different ways and they kind of change it every year, but I they're from LA, so maybe I just assumed it was the Orange County, but it could be. Maybe it's open to interpretation, who knows.
Yeah.
And then in smuggling in board game news into the front of the episode, I got a physical copy of The Secrets of Lost Arnak, which is like a small like worker placement deck builder game. And I got to play it IRL, so that's a lot of fun. I hadn't done that in a little bit, so that was cool.
Nice. Secrets of Lost what? I'm sorry?
Secrets of Lost Arnak. It was designed by like a husband-wife team, and I think it was their first board game. But it's it's a nice, happy archaeology, like mystical type theming to the game. So
the name feels like it could go like the Lovecrafty horror direction as well.
I wish.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Arnak is almost 100% an anagram of the husband's name.
Maybe. The designer is Min Elwin. They're from I have no idea what the country's name is anymore. It's called Czech Games.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Wait, oops. Did they change their name again?
Oh, I don't know. I want to say Czechoslovakia, but I have no idea if that is accurate as of either, let's say, 1946 or 1994.
I think it's Czech Republic, but yes. I could be wrong.
Republic.
Publisher Czech Games Edition?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. They are the ones who do Under Falling Skies, that solo game that I really liked. So they got some bangers.
See, I knew that I was right to hesitate because I used an outdated term for that country.
Oh no.
Oh man.
It's all good. Sorry to our Czech Republic listeners though.
Have we discussed the fact that Turkey is changing its name?
Is Turkey changing its name?
Yeah, they're tired of people making turkey jokes.
So they're going cold turkey on the old name?
Yep.
What was that? Are they really changing their name or was that just a joke?
They are really changing their name, and that is really the reason.
That is confusing. I don't know. That is weird. I would just assume you would own it.
But. Yeah, I feel like I'm generally... so it is now officially T U with an umlaut R K I Y E.
And Turkey calls it Turkey.
Is that actually like the local pronunciation though or something?
Turkey?
Yeah. I don't know.
NPR. I just listened to it really quickly.
Yeah.
I feel like dodging dumb jokes is the one reason I might call a country by its wrong name. Like, I feel like we can't make it that easy to dodge stupid jokes.
That's also just on a technicality. It's like if that is actually just like a way for them to change the spelling of their to actually reflect a local, like, hey, you know, just our country is called Turkey. It'd be kind of like Germany saying, no, just you guys can call us Deutschland if you want. Right. Please tell me that is still accurate.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Well, checks out.
Yeah. Wait, what's accurate?
Kicking in here.
Deutschland's the German name for Germany.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if they were doing one of those, that I'd be okay. But also, well, it's not my place to tell the country what to, I don't know.
Yeah, I went on a big deep dive the other day on, like, figuring out why China is called China. And apparently, it's like some people called them, was it Cathay or something?
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I don't know, it's just this weird thing, and then that... got me down the rabbit hole of apparently the way 40K or rather Warhammer names its countries is just find the old names for whatever culture we're ripping off and just straight up use that.
And just use that. Yeah. It's like Forgotten Realms. Like, oh, we can have a god called Tyr. It's fine. I don't have much. The little anecdote. So this involves an animal coming to harm, but a while ago and from natural causes. So just to warn people about that, I went to the psychiatrist this morning, have a check in every few months just to basically
they get my vitals and I give them a thumbs up saying medicine's working, and then we're good, and I pay them money, and then I wait another couple months. So the nurse, you know, weighs me and takes my blood pressure and all that, and she compliments my water bottle. I have a expensive water bottle. I've got a water bottle that if you knock it over, it will not spill. She says, "Oh, that's a nice water bottle."
The floor will break before the bottle will.
Pro tip, do not tell them, "Oh, it's full of whiskey."
You so never said which medicine was working good.
Right. And I said, "Oh yeah, it's a nice water bottle. I got a nice one because my cats would always knock over anything I was drinking out of. You know, this one, it's hard to knock it over to begin with, but even if it does, it's not going to spill." So I got talking about cats. She said, "Oh, my son has always been a cat person." It's like, "Oh, that's sweet." And then I said, "Oh, you know, just the first cat he got when he was out on his own, got this cat, and it was missing a leg, and he adopted it. It was just the real timid, but it was the sweetest cat in the entire world." I was like, "Oh, adopting, handicapped cat. That's great." You know, like that. And then she says, "Yeah." And then one morning at 2 a.m., he calls me. He came home late, and the other cat, he was meowing at him and just was trying to lead him. Turned out the three-legged cat had a stroke, and it was lying in the... It was lying in the litter box, and then he had to bury him that night in the backyard while the ground was frozen.
Jesus,
lady, you're taking my blood pressure. It's going to be high now.
It was good. I was proud of my reading there, but, hey, but nice. It was just like, I was like, you may not know, like, I'm not here for depression specifically, but also your bummer story. And I was like, you know, I didn't actually say this. So what I said was, "Oh, that's awful. You know, I hope he was able to move on and take care of other cats," which is what you say to a human in that situation. But it's like, I would be really careful, just whipping that story out on someone.
Yeah, that seems a little intense.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Did you see the headline today? The government now recommends that all Americans older than 19 be screened for anxiety.
No,
crazy. I didn't see anything like that. It makes sense, but also, like, anxiety, I don't know, mental health screenings that are just like, "Hey, can you answer this questionnaire?" are a little weird to me.
Also, I should amend my reaction and say interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Then we're talking about mental health.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's more common now to ask, like, "Oh, what kind of anxiety do you have?" Instead of it being like, "Oh, do you have any anxiety?"
Yeah. Like, is it situational? Is it because of gestures at everything, or is it affecting your ability to live your life? By which I mean your ability to work. Because that is the metric. I didn't mean to bring us into a bummer. I just thought it was real funny that this nice.
Oh, no, don't worry. It's not you bringing us into a bummer.
I just thought that was it was funny that nurse with all the best intentions just told me a real bummer about this sweet cat.
It's one of those things, like, she made a connection, started telling the story, and clearly did not think in advance about where the story landed, and then could not stop.
Just like, "Oh yeah, he adopted this timid cat that had one leg, or that was missing one leg. It was a sweet cat, and they had many years together." Cool. I love it.
Yeah.
So I used to have,
you know, she's going to her therapist later in the week, and, you know, how was your week? I told the cat story again, Martha. We talked about this.
See, I used to have a one-legged pigeon that chilled outside my apartment. Ooh, and right. He was a badass because you did something that would, like, normally scare a pigeon away, and it, you know, they'd go flap away indignantly, and it would just give you the eye and be like, "Nah, I've seen some shit. You're not getting me to move."
Pigeons rule. Like, everything that people say is bad about pigeons is actually just bad about cities.
Yeah. Like,
it's not their fault that, you know, it's not their fault that we built these things that look exactly like the cliffs where they like to live. Oh, man. Cool. Well, that sounds like some banter to me. I think that we should proceed to, you know, the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I have something new, but it's kind of a bummer.
Oh, well, let's segue off of the bummer and then build up as opposed to ending with the bummer.
Okay. Ooh, yes. Okay, sweet. So I reinstalled Fallout 76 because they released the new The Pit expansion.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And unfortunately, it's The Pits.
Aww.
That is probably the best thing to come out of this experience, not going to lie.
is the pun about is it like a backslide for the game? Like what specifically is bad about it?
Well, so the issue is the big pitch is like, oh, we're making this huge new expansion where, you know, we're going to let you, you know, explore new parts of, you know, the Fallout world, and it's going to be, you know, story driven and that sort of thing. What it really is rather than being like a regular like map, like, you know, like something you might expect from one, say the Fallout 4 expansions where, you know, you'd get a new map to explore, it's more like a very, very large instance. So you complete a series of daily quests, fairly easy daily quests, in order to get power cores for your vertebrate. And that gives you basically one pass of, you know, running through, you know, going to the pit and running through this series of linked quest objectives, which are things like escorting NPCs and, you know, protecting areas, killing enemies, that sort of thing. So it's basically a daily quest, you know, like a live game daily quest.
Huh.
And when you do that, you get new currency, which is inexplicably stamps that you trade to a stamp collector for gear. The other problem, though, is even the gear you get is just kind of shit. Because one, you get, I think at most 8 stamps a run, and unlocking anything takes like between 100 and 150 stamps, something like that. And then, you know, most of the stuff, there's, you know, a handful of cosmetics, one melee weapon, and one new power armor. And the new power armor isn't, apparently isn't even like end game tier, or like, well, isn't top tier at least.
Okay.
So if you aren't specced as melee or power armor, you just don't get anything. Well, I mean, obviously you get it, but it's no good for you.
Yeah.
And if you spec'd power armor by this point in the game, you probably have something better.
Right.
And then the other big issue is just, there's nothing really in this that makes it recognizably Pittsburgh. You know, it, there's two different, scenarios, and the one I've played, it entirely takes, it takes place basically in this big, factory. And like, yes, Pittsburgh has a lot of factories, and that's the thing it's known for in the Fallout universe.
Right.
But without seeing the larger world to be like, oh, this is the one place in America that can still manufacture, you know, pre-war goods and stuff like that. Without seeing that larger world, it's basically just a factory that could be literally any other factory in the game.
Right.
So, so yeah, you know, it's just, you know, one of those things, the game is much, much better than when it released. You know, there's a lot of good things they've done, but, yeah, The other thing is it's very much built with multiplayer in mind, which I thought they had learned better.
Right. So I like by looking into this, it kind of seems so this is the only thing that they're calling Fallout 76 Expeditions, which seems like a new mission type or a new like PvE content type. That is a way for them to what it seems like is design a finite number of spaces and then just put a bunch of missions in variations of that space or the same space with different starting positions and stuff. Like it seems like this is less an expansion and more like, hey, this is a way for us to do things instead of the expansions you've expected.
You're saying this is the Chalice Dungeons of Fallout 76?
Is what it looks like based on what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem is like that could be well done if you made those areas actually interesting.
Yeah, but if it's just another factory.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I have uninstalled it and will be installing Deathloop in its place.
Hey. I saw that hit Game Pass. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, that was added on Xbox and PC. Or wait, no, it had always been on PC, but it is finally on Xbox and therefore Game Pass right now. Mm-hmm. Yes. There we go. Yeah, play Deathloop. It's fun.
Yep.
I intend to.
Yeah. So, other than that, I've been continuing on with Destiny 2. Nothing too earth-shattering with this season. Being a space paladin pirate continues to be fun and very, very stupid.
Okay.
I'm definitely here for the game doubling down on fun and stupid, especially since they're actually, you know, telling some fairly decent stories. So
kind of seems to be a valence that works better for them than the super serious stuff that was like that I associate with Destiny 1 at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. But yeah, no, I mean, The good thing is, they're really kind of hitting their stride with a lot of the characters. I like... It's going to be hard to explain this. It's kind of just the thing you have to, play the game. But they've narrowed down on, when the characters need to refer to you, in cutscenes and stuff, they refer to you as the Guardian.
Okay.
Which, technically, all of the players are guardians, but they do a really good job of sort of threading the needle of like, you're not the chosen one. You're basically a super soldier, but you're a soldier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's very much a part of the game's, kind of DNA and narrative and that sort of thing. But at the same time, they also balance that by doing the writing to kind of suggest that, at the same time, you're a soldier that, like, the various characters know and trust. Okay. And so that's just a really fun, really good kind of, I guess, way to be power fantasy without just being a, stupid, like, overpowered power fantasy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like is much more nuanced than kind of what the writing would have been capable of when the game first launched.
Huh. That's good.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. Also, I hadn't considered, it's kind of cool, the majority of the major characters in the game actually aren't white, which I had never realized until I was like, read it. I was reading some Destiny fans being not great and racist and stuff, and then realized, but wait, like, almost all of the characters you're interacting with are not white.
I mean, the biggest tend to be inconsistent, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not logical.
True. Yeah.
What? No way.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep. That's all I got.
Cool. Mind if I go?
Go for it.
Jump in.
Yeah. So this past Saturday, I got my Steam Deck.
Oh, cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's the new collectible card game from Steam, right?
Yes, it was a $600 collectible card deck from Steam.
IRL.
Okay,
artifact.
So a little bit cheaper than being a Magic player.
Not long term.
Amortized. It's hard to it's hard to say. No, I got it, and I'm impressed. It's good. I didn't know what to expect as probably one of the three people on Earth that would defend the Steam controller. I would also come around and say, it wasn't the best feeling thing in the world, you know. And there were any number of, remember the Steam box, those things that they sold and then didn't sell. I just didn't have a lot of trust in Steam hardware, but I had heard enough good things. It turned out there was no reason to worry. Like, everything on this thing feels really good. Even the little touchpads, which is nice, and the way that it handles, you know, like one of them handles one side of the screen and the other handles the other side of the screen is cool. None of the buttons feel cheap. Despite how large this thing is, and it is hilariously big.
How many switches is it?
It's probably like 1.3 switches in terms of like footprint, while also being bulkier. I got the one. I just got the most expensive one because I didn't want to worry about it. Like, the price difference between the different models was not big enough for me to think like, oh yeah, I will get the least expensive one and just resent the fact that I did that based on what was there. So yeah, based on storage size mostly. But I got the one with the anti-glare on the screen. The screen is really good. It runs games very well. To test it, I wanted to really give it something intricate, something, you know, that uses all the modern rendering technology. So wanted to have it chew on Vampire Survivor, which is a game that
yes
come to the dark side.
Oh yeah, no, just as, so Vampire Survivor, it's the price is gonna go up soon. So I figured, okay, I'll get it for like $3 is, you know, it's worth getting, right? And it's Steam Deck verified and it's not on Switch. And that's a game that I would like to play if it was on the Switch. I don't know that I need to go into like a lot of details about it because we've talked about Vampire Survivors a lot, but it's good. I knew what to expect based on what you all had said, but you kind of, for me, I had to see like the empowerment loop of unlocking stuff and getting the money to upgrade base stats, and even within an individual round, you know, just leveling up and getting the three choices there. Like, three choices is just enough to make it feel meaningful. And there's almost always something that will like either complement or form a build. I've not gotten very far. I'm only in the woods or whatever. I haven't unlocked every like a second map or anything. But it I keep on hitting a wall. I cannot get past the 11-minute wall that is there. Anybody who's played probably knows that around 11 minutes, the game spawns a box of skeletons around you, and the way that everything in Vampire Survivors moves is just to move in a direct line toward you. So unless you can very quickly damage and cut a hole in the wall around you to get outside of it, this whole swarm of skeletons will get in and melt your health. I've not been able to get past that. I assume that's something I'm going to accomplish mostly with upgrades and luck.
So pro tip,
okay,
you usually the way I do it is either A, just you know, eventually they'll disappear, or B, I fairly often just run straight through them and take the hits.
Yeah, I've not been able to take the hits.
Well, I was going to propose option C, which is this is still luck based, right? But you occasionally, enemies will drop things on the ground, and one of them, I forget which item it is like an instant screen clear.
It's the rosary. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I would do is, as I'm getting close to that time, is something like that dropped, I would just kind of shuffle around it.
Yeah.
And make sure I kept it on the screen as best as I could for when that drop happened. Mm-hmm. Again, that you need one to drop close enough to the right time. It needs to be in a place where you don't have to walk away from or over it.
Yeah.
Before you want. And then, you know, that has a lot of contingencies, but
mm-hmm. What sort of builds have you been doing with your character?
I've mostly been dabbling. So like I just unlocked the one with the diamonds. I don't know their weird little names for these things. I think it's called like the Rune Tracer or whatever. I just unlocked that person. I unlocked that, and I had a pretty good run with it right before recording. Which has been good. I tend to favor increasing damage over other stats, and if I don't have the whips, I want to get the whips to deal with things close. Because I don't trust the garlic. I think the garlic takes too many upgrades to get the clearing power that the whips do. For projectiles, I tend to favor the fireballs more than anything else. I've not found very good use for the chrono tracer or whatever it is that freezes things, or the holy water, or as they call it, Santa water. which is, to me, that's what you call peppermint schnapps.
Yes.
I'm now going to call it that.
So have you looked up any of the interactions in the game, or are you trying to find them naturally?
I mean, I've played this game for 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So I've not put an awful lot of like research into it. It's mostly just been fucking around when I felt like I had 15 minutes to kill.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But I to know that there are synergies is good. But yeah, I've not looked any up.
Yeah.
It's good. Like, I understand why this is a compulsive game for a lot of people. I'll probably end up hitting a wall where I don't unlock anything, you know, or just if I get a couple of bad runs in a row, I'll be like, all right, bye bye game. as is always the case with anything roguelike or run based like that. But I already feel like I've gotten my $3 out of it. So
yeah.
So yeah. Other stuff. So yeah, Steam Deck is good. I also played other more technically involved things, but not enough to feel like I could talk about them substantively. You know, it's good. Like it is a surprisingly good piece of hardware. I streamed I erroneously called this an early access game, but it is definitely not. It actually just recently came out of early access like a month ago. It is a game on PC called Skinwalker Hunt. Skinwalker Hunt. I am to my mind, the Skinwalker is like it's a name for a shape-shifting monster that is generally seen out in the wilderness, you know. I'm not sure if this is pulling from a particular myth. It mentions, you know, in indigenous folklore kind of stuff, but I've got no idea how it is. In this, a skinwalker is terrorizing a patch of wilderness. A large just a large mountain woods kind of area around a lake. You are somebody who's been hired to hunt and kill this thing. It also has made the animals in the area aggressive, and there are worshippers of the Skinwalker that are about, that kind of act like mini bosses. And the Skinwalker himself has a crazy amount of HP, only takes a couple of shots and then runs away. So it's a hunting game where you're like wearing down your quarry over time and gaining mastery of the space. Gaining mastery of the map is the way that you win things over a period of time. They call this it's a horror themed hunting game is what it is. So
you have to do like hunting type things, like I don't know, managing scent or, you know, using calls or anything like that?
No, I was disappointed that it was not that involved, especially because it called itself a hunting game. You know, it's more like like an open non-linear first person shooter. You know, you can dash, you can run across, you know, a fair bit across the map before your stamina runs out, things like that. There are some things, so like you will find signs of the Skinwalker, either tracks or scat. If you interact with it, it will give you like a like your ESP will come, will activate, and you'll like get a sense of where it is, but only for a short amount of time, because this thing is running and hiding from you and stalking you, and can also go invisible like the Predator.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Does it ever turn into other things like people or
no? It has not done that for me.
It's not a very good Skinwalker, you know.
Yeah. which is why I opened up with, it's my understanding that the Skinwalker is this shapeshifter. No clue.
The shape is just invisible though.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Interestingly, apparently this game is a sequel.
Is it a sequel? I know that they made a game called Witch Hunt, but I don't know about,
or maybe a spiritual successor.
They're connected. Yeah.
Yeah, not like connected story wise, but same vibe of game where, you know, there's a boogeyman out there in a map that you're exploring and kind of mastering. Looks like they got that similar look, similar vibe.
Yeah.
Maybe Witch Hunt, you're using slightly less modern weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
a vibe sequel.
But I mean, in this one, you're not really using modern stuff. You have like a scoped rifle, and you find a broken down shotgun that has a misfire chance on it, which actually is super. I feel like that's being managed to make make dramatic moments. You know, there were times where like, oh my gosh, this thing is coming right at me, and I go to fire, and my first shot is it's a misfire, shit, and then you press the button. It's like basically the same trick Far Cry 2 did, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, especially terrifying to have that on the shotgun, which is the weapon where you want to let them get in close, so
right,
the least possible amount of time to recover from a misfire.
So I didn't manage to kill the Skinwalker. I got a good way down. When it ended up making the difference is when I say like mastering the space, you have access to these things called hunter's totems. You can place four of them, and what they do is it's like a safe point for one, but also it is a proximity sensor. There's a radius around it where if the Skinwalker is in that circle, then you'll get a notification saying, hey, Skinwalker is over here by this one. And you'll see on your little compass, like, okay, there's that. You can check your map and see like the red area where it is likely to be. You put those down and try not to have the circles overlap, so there's no redundant, overlap. There's, you know, no wasted space. And then you also have, and I didn't get one of these to work, but as you kill the regular animals, you get meat and you find bear traps around. You can place bear traps, which I believe will also alert you and hold the Skinwalker for a short amount of time. So there's that. I think that if I'd learned to lean on all of that a little bit earlier, I might have made a little bit more progress over the course of the stream. But it was a fine enough time by itself. I don't know that I would like make a full-throated endorsement of this thing, but if that vibe sounds good, then it might be, you know, might be worth it for you. I don't know.
If you ever want to play a battle royale take on basically this, check out The Hunt Showdown.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm.
No, that one's been kicking around for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, very solid take on what you're what it sounds like you're talking about anyways.
Mm-hmm. This would not be the first the first horror hunting game I would recommend you play. let me make sure I get that, because I've talked about this before. There is a game called Squirrel Stapler that was made by the developer who did Dusk, David Szymanski. It's in Dread X Collection 2 on Steam. Squirrel Stapler is, I believe, you know, it's simpler than this, but also it is also like a little bit more effective in terms of both hunting and horror. I would recommend doing that one first, but this one is I think a little bit more overtly spooky, a little bit less absurd on its face, let's say. Yeah. Let me check the time. How long have I been talking? I was going to talk shit about Rocksmith Plus. Is anybody interested in hearing that? Ooh, or sure. Do you want to segue off of it? Okay.
I am actually curious. So
Rocksmith Plus is not very good in a world where you can still buy Rocksmith 2014 and also one of the Real Tone cables. They are $30 on Amazon. You may be able to find one locally. Who knows if they are putting more of them out there. Rocksmith Plus as it exists, I wanted it to be a good thing, because I really believe in rhythm games as a way to appreciate music and also, you know, learn how to play and create it. You know, the previous Rocksmith game, specifically 2014, I stand behind as being very good teaching tools, especially because, you know, like, yeah, they have the little lessons built in, but at least with the official songs that you get, they do a very good job of working you up the difficulty curve, where like, okay, you're playing the root note, and then you're playing, you know, the root and another thing in a chord, and you're not playing every note in the solo. You know, you're going up there, and the next time you play, maybe there's a little bit more until, you know, ta-da, you're playing the entire song. It's somebody holding the handlebars while you're riding the bike, and then they take their hands off and, hey, you're going. You didn't know you could do it, but you can. Good stuff. Love Rocksmith 2014, especially with the ability to download custom DLC. Great. Rocksmith Plus has a lot. I mean, it basically has the same bones, right? Same visual tablature where the notes are coming at you. It wasn't broke. Don't need to fix it. Works great. The problem is that though it touts itself as a more, you know, as an effective teaching tool, there is nothing that I see in Rocksmith Plus that provides like a more substantial, let's say tutorial for a way to play these, play these songs, or, you know, even just to learn basic skills, like the basic skills stuff. It's just replicated from what I can see. Little videos explaining here's how you do this, and here's an exercise to illustrate the concept. For the songs that they have, for the ones that that Rocksmith itself has charted, which I will get to that in a minute, they also are keeping track of your performance with particular skills, you know, things like sustains, things like chords, arpeggiation, hammer-ons, pull-offs, slides, bends, and any of those kinds of things, and saying like, hey, you should really, you know, you need to practice like this particular spot that was giving you some trouble. And then you go in and repeat it, and there's the skill. Here's a refresher on that particular skill. And it kind of makes a little profile of you as a player. All that fine and good, but not necessarily, I think, more, let's say, effective than playing a song that you know and recognize and that you fucked up. Like, oh, I played that part of the song bad. I want to go back and isolate that section of the song and play it slower and then faster, which is something that the previous game could do. I make a point of saying that you want to do this with songs that you know, because that's, I think, important. You know the song, you're more likely to play something if you're, for me anyway, I'm more likely to want to master something if I like the song, you know? That is important. The soundtrack in a music game is a big deal. With the exception of a few like high profile like singles that they have on here, this is a dog shit soundtrack. They have 5,000 tracks. They have 5,000 tracks in this thing, and it is really bad. I want to do a little exercise. Name an artist. Okay, well, I'll get us started here. Artist who appears in a lot of rhythm games. Deep Purple. Okay, 70s rock. You know, solid riffs, good solos, stuff like that. What song would you expect to be represented if you had Deep Purple on the soundtrack?
I don't know. I don't know if we know the Deep Purple discography.
Yeah, I'd go with Purple Rain.
Okay,
just to make your eyes twitch.
Google says I should expect.
All the dad rockers who listen to this are going to be really disappointed in all of us now.
Yeah, you would expect Smoke on the Water, Highway Star, Hush, the three right there. Okay, none of them present.
Wow.
Yeah, name another band that you would expect to see in a Queens of the Stone Age. Not present.
No.
Ooh. Eagles of Death Metal.
No Eagles of Death Metal. Sorry.
White Stripes.
I do not believe that there are any White Stripes. Not on this.
They were the White Stripes or Rockin' Towards Someone Else. That they had Jack White songs in the original one.
Yeah, no, they had 16 Saltines in there. Yep. I think there was a Rockin' Tour song in the original. Yeah, no, none of that. While I'm in
mainstream,
the,
like Fallout Boy, Green Day, like stuff like that.
Let's see here, Fallout Boy, nothing there. Yeah.
Good Lord.
What do we have on this?
So you see on here, yeah, Franz Ferdinand, okay? Yeah, Franz Ferdinand. What song do you expect to hear on that? World War One. Take Me Out, right? Mm-hmm. There was a song in the original Guitar Hero. No, nothing. Nothing there.
Jeez.
Yeah, so that is something that is if they have an artist that you recognize, it is very likely that they do not have the song that you want to hear. Okay. And you know, even if you like know the band, but like aren't necessarily crazy about them. So, the band Everclear from the 90s, you know, Father of Mine, wonderful, a cover of, Brown Eyed Girl. I will buy you I'll buy you a New Life. Okay, so first off, all that they have are the re-recordings of some of those songs. Okay,
and do you mean like they did a cover band, or what do you mean?
No, it's like it's not the original recordings of Everclear doing it. It is Everclear like coming back and like, oh yeah, we're gonna re-record these songs.
Oh,
so it's not the
specifically
it's not
for Rocksmith, or
well, I mean just for them to release. So okay. I assume people want to buy an Everclear song, want to buy an Everclear album, but even that, okay. So we have we've got this. So here's the other thing. All right, they've got some of these songs. So a song I recognize, wonderful. Okay, like every Everclear song, it's a song about your parents disappointing you. All right, they don't actually have they don't have a chart for that. Like there's no, you know, like notes. What they have is they have the license to these songs, and you can select them and think, okay, I'm gonna play, you know, it's a pretty simple song, but I'm gonna play it and I recognize this. We're gonna get there. Instead of having like a lead chart or like the rhythm part where every little note is charted out, instead what they have are chord charts. Okay.
Oh.
where it still plays, it still will, you know, play the song for you, and you have the fretboard coming at you, but instead of telling you what exactly to play, it'll just say like, something sounds like an A here, maybe.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And even those are not made by Ubisoft themselves. Some tracks are made by Ubisoft. Other tracks, specifically the charting, are made by community. So they say, oh, we have this song by this artist. We have the license to use it. We're going to open up the authoring tools so our community will come in and make the chart for
it. Good Lord.
Yeah. And this like is
that existed in college. There was some, you know, shitty Guitar Hero knockoff right off the bat where you could get that. Like that, that is the laziest thing I've ever heard.
Right. And this is $15 a month. So like they're like that.
You can pay $15 a month to work for us, creating our chord chart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fucking inexcusable.
I mean, that's some pretty late stage capitalism stuff. That's pretty funny.
it's bleak as hell. Like it is funny, but it is also insulting. And it's like, I don't know. I want this to exist. Like people should like it has been a good learning tool, but like I said, I cannot in good conscience recommend anybody buy this and play it, because like they say, oh, we have 5,000 songs. I beg to differ. You have potentially 5,000 songs.
This is like the streaming problem with like home video services, where it's like there's a million things to watch, but nothing you really want to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the good songs that are there are also ones that are either like on the disc or just available still as DLC for Rocksmith 2014. So like, you know, looking at the most popular, Eurythmics, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, or Bill Withers, Ain't No Sunshine, Boston, More Than a Feeling, like all of those are there. And if they're not there, they're available as custom DLC. Like, again, Rocksmith 14 with custom DLC. Like I downloaded and played a Sloan song that I like. They didn't release it, but somebody out there, in a way that Ubisoft wasn't indirectly taking money for, charted out Money City Maniacs, and I downloaded it and played it. And it's just there. It's on Customs Forge is the name of the site to do it. Like buy Rocksmith 2014, get a real tone cable, and go that way, which makes me think that after a while, the official DLC and the official Rocksmith 2014 are going to be unavailable to purchase as they try and usher people over toward this.
Yeah, that is the worst part. They're pulling the old one down.
Yeah, I don't know for sure if they're pulling the old one down. I don't know that just yet. What I'm saying is that feels very likely, especially as licenses expire for the ability to continue selling some of those old tracks on storefronts. Hmm. Yeah. Boy, I wanted to like this. I was, you know, a defender in concept of the monthly charge, because okay, you're not buying DLC. You know, that's the same as getting five songs per month is what you would be playing. Or what you would be paying under the old model for that. I was like, okay, that's cool. If they add more, haven't added any more in the 2 weeks.
They're following the Halo Infinite model.
Yeah. So I feel like I've gone on forever about this. I'm supremely disappointed, and I canceled my subscription like immediately.
Oof. I mean, good. You took that so other people didn't have to.
Yes.
And you already answered the multiplayer question, it sounds like.
Yeah, let's do that.
Serendipitous. that was not planned.
any questions about Rocksmith Plus? Dennis, to anticipate yours, Rocksmith Plus does have bass. However, instead of chord charts for that, because it doesn't make any sense, they just have like, I think it's like bass boxes or something like that. Bass patterns, which is just like, here's roughly like what frets you would hit to make this sound good, maybe, you know, like you would see if you were looking at like bass notation, right? Like okay like, yeah, these are the notes that would fit in while the song is in a C chord for this, right?
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, Any questions?
No. Glad you bit before I did.
Yes. Just reinstall Rocksmith 2014. You will not be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. That's it for me. I will let Dennis and Ben decide who goes next because I am too exhausted from the invective.
Let's play paper, Rocksmith, scissors for it.
I have two old games.
Okay.
Some older than others. So Ben, if you have anything better than that to close out with, I can go first.
You can go for it. I'll go last.
Yeah. So I had a friend in the neighborhood start playing XCOM 2.
Ooh.
Which I nerded out way too hard when he said he was checking it out.
Oh yeah, you don't want
to. Might have scared him a little bit, and then promptly went back to my house. And XCOM 2 is one of the games that I never uninstall. I just always want to have the option to boot it up if I want. And I went back in. I fell back into the XCOM hole.
Uh oh.
Yeah. And man, it's been a while since I've played that game.
Are you playing it modded or?
Just some quality of life mods. Okay. So nothing significant. Stuff that just makes the game a little bit nicer without affecting any of the, you know, actual gameplay.
Hmm.
So yeah, honestly, playing on PC, even though I use fairly light mods, I really can't imagine going back to not having them.
Right.
It's just simple stuff like an evac all button so that at the end of a mission, you don't have to go through and individually watch the animation for every single soldier fast roping out. You just hit a button and they all do it at the same time.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a dumb little thing, but that's also probably 2 minutes back in your day that you'd just be staring at the screen.
Yeah.
You know, so stuff like that, a numeric damage view. What is it called? Numeric damage, I think, is the mod name.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfathomably, for some reason, they thought it was a good idea to show health in XCOM as like a series of pips instead of having the number.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're going up against, you know, enemies that have 30 health, trying to count pips and do math to figure out, you know, if you have lethal or not is big infuriating.
Big pips are 5, and yeah, it's like tally marks. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, mods are something I wouldn't live without, although I haven't gotten into like, I think what people would consider true modding for the game, doing long war and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I had forgotten just how paranoid you need to be playing XCOM. It feels like I've scattered this area pretty well. I can reveal one more square of sight lines at the end of my turn. Like really this cover position is so nice. And there's, you know, like I would have seen the enemies by now. Every time there is a group of enemies hiding in the one square that I hadn't revealed yet. it is amazing. And the sight lines, how those are calculated in XCOM, I will never understand. But just the mantra of never use a double move is absolutely true. I jumped back in. I'm doing the second hardest difficulty to kind of get my feet wet again. And I'm playing an Iron Man, cause that's the only way I can feel anymore. I think second attempt, I got pretty far in and I was kind of nearing, you can kind of feel the tipping point in XCOM 2 where, you know, you're no longer on the back foot. You're no longer kind of screwed. If anything goes horribly wrong, it's like, yeah, I could get squad wiped at this point. I'd still probably be able to power through. Like, it feels really good to hit that point in the game. And so I was like, all right, it's happening. And then literally I absentmindedly tried to use the camera controls from another game. like in Trackmania, you hold alt and right click to drag the camera around.
Oh no.
And I just, you know, I was, you know, looking at the screen, I must've been distracted or something and alt right clicked.
And you walked and
I walked my, best, guy out into the open, into like 4 enemies.
It's a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off.
Yeah, that was not great. And so one misclick and a run is just over. And that's reminded me of times where like I've had like a cup of something, you know, next to my mouse pad because I'm an idiot, and I've like moused over far enough to bump the right click button into the cup or whatever. So just, yeah, that's, Iron Man is a lot of fun, and I like having the real stakes, but it also like you get a fair number of runs that end because of just stupid reasons.
Is that paranoia or just a heightened awareness that things could go terrible at any time?
That's fair. It, you know, XCOM is like life in that way.
Well, no, I wasn't even trying to be like bleak, like, haha. I was just more like, just trying to be a little bit more precise with the name of it. Right.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. I honestly, I feel like, it was also a reminder, you know, so one, you gotta be, hyper paranoid or just hyper aware of everything could go wrong, or like assume you're going to reveal a pod of enemies with every move. And if you would be screwed, you know, if there was a group of enemies at the end of this move, don't move there. Doesn't matter how unlikely you think it is, don't move there. But the other thing I you know, kind of have had reawoken or kind of remembered is that XCOM is not a game that you can play ambiently. Like, you have to be mentally on, engaged, and you know, you ate your Wheaties. Because just, you know, because of Iron Man, because how fast things can go wrong, I feel like it's a game that I need to play when I'm feeling at the top of my game.
Right, right.
So yeah, I'll play other games when I just want to chill, that are no less fun. And then XCOM is like, you know, if I'm feeling up to it.
Hmm.
But yeah, I'm back into that saddle.
Well, condolences.
Yes, indeed.
Nice.
Then the other thing that I talked about last week and I finished this week was Opus Magnum, the puzzle game.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And yeah, man, that is a really, really satisfying game to master. Mechanically, like the last couple of puzzles, I felt like they really stuck the landing where, you know, it stayed fun while being very, very challenging. Story-wise, and again, last week I was impressed at how involved the story of it was or how well done the story was. The ending was a little flat for me. I kind of understood what they were indicating happened at the end, but I felt like they could have presented it better.
Okay.
You know, without spoiling anything. but you know, that's fine. The puzzles remain on point, but you unlock like a final chapter, which is just a series of puzzles where suddenly you are space constrained. And I forget who asked last week, like, do you have any borders? Or like, you know, how big can you build your machine? And in the entire main story, there's no constraints. You can build it as big as you want. However, in this kind of final set of challenges, there is very tight constraints. And the like convention is like, oh, now you're using an alchemist's field kit instead of the table in your lab. And
okay,
you know, it's this is a time-honored tradition that alchemists have vied with. And oh my God, it just having the space constraints makes things next to impossible. I'm getting vibes of Pipe Push Paradise, if you guys remember that game.
Yeah, no, I remember that. One of the many Steven sausage roll alikes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, that's another great analog for, yeah. So this is you know, Opus Magnum by way of Steven Sausage Roll. And it's got that infuriating quality where you can be so close to the right answer, and you are one rotation off or one space off, and that means you have to entirely rebuild your approach from scratch.
Yeah.
And I've literally spent 2 days working on just the first puzzle. And I've gotten to that point, and I'm like, I think everything about this seems right. And I think I've got everything in the right place. And I either need to blow this up and just like remove everything, delete all the coding that I've done and start again flat, or I don't know what, because I'm so close and just cannot get it literally the last turn, to have it ready to deliver. So, it is definitely a challenging mode, for anyone who wants that kind of next level at the end of a game. And it does feel like it is really paying off all the effort that I've put into learning this kind of like hex based machine system.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's, I finished it. We'll see if I have a breakthrough on this first challenge puzzle, but, definitely getting out of my depth, on the challenge side of things, which is what I would expect for the kind of bonus content.
So it's like XCOM puzzle game now.
Yeah, there's a theme in the games I'm playing right now, which is I spend 90% of playing them just like staring at the screen with my hands folded under my chin, trying to figure out what the right thing to do next is.
That's better than what you used to do with XCOM, which is pace around the room, pulling at your hair and muttering to yourself.
My red string wall was beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. So those are the games that I've been playing.
Very cool. Ben, round us out.
Yeah, I got a handful of things. Over the weekend, played some partier games with some friends. I played Fall Guys. There was a recent update with that. They had like space theme levels that they added. They kind of revamped the main menu system. So basically you can pick what categories you want to play as, if you want to do team or solo only, or there's a category for specifically like the new maps and stuff like that. But that game like still continues to be pretty fun, which is impressive. I think we talked about this before, how they went free to play. So just to try and get more people to play, I think. But it's kind of impressive, like at this point, like they've consistently added content to it over the last like 2 years that it's been out, that like there's a good diversity of like mini games now, because that was kind of one of the sticking points when it first came out, is you just kind of played the same games over and over again.
Okay.
But it's pretty fresh coming back to it after that, where, you know, it's, you don't play the same game as often anymore, unless you're in a very specific category. So it's kind of fun. Like the way we were playing it is just like pass a controller around person to person, you know, like see how far they can get. And then nobody got any crowns, so nobody got that lucky. But I don't even think people even got to the final round. It's especially difficult on teams if you're pairing up with random people, because sometimes you can just get stuck with people who are not operating well, and and you're kind of at the mercy of who you get paired up with. If somebody disconnects or something like that, then you're a team of three against teams of four, and then that can kind of get you hosed. Playing solos a little bit better if that's like how you're doing things. But yeah, I don't know, overall it's a pretty pleasant experience, so it's just kind of nice to know that game's still going strong, I guess. It's hard to tell like how many players are robots versus humans, because it's like obvious at certain points, like the Seesaws level, where there's like a group of like 10 beans and they're all going left and right at the exact same time. It's like, okay, well, those are robots, but who are the people, you know? So it's hard to tell like how full the lobbies actually are. But it definitely gets down to being all human players, and it gets down to like, you know, like 10 to 20 people. But yeah, anyway, that game's still a game. I don't know if there's any questions about that.
It's just wild to think that just like, oh yeah, that was like a, an early pandemic game. Like that first summer
it was
Fall Guys and Among Us.
Yep. And I think Phasmophobia came out the month after that. So for me, it was like a series of monthly fad games, but yeah.
All pretty solid games.
Yeah.
I mean, these flash in the pans keep on flashing, though. Like,
oh, yeah.
Get a long tail on them.
Yeah. Well, and the Fall Guys just got added to Switch, so that probably was a shot in the arm.
Yeah.
You know what it makes me curious for? Because, you know, this type of game on the Switch, the Kirby's Dream Buffet or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Recently came out. And that was supposed to be like a Fall Guys alike.
Yes.
But I've heard nothing about it since its launch. So
I feel bad saying this, but the fact that it cost $15 stopped me from giving it a shot.
That's like a red flag for a Nintendo game.
Oh, I don't even know. It's not that if it costs more, I would be more interested in it. It's just I don't play multiplayer games. So like the fact that Fall Guys was, you know, at least on PlayStation Plus, just kind of came with it. That was below the barrier for entry for me, you know, like to give it a shot. what would happen is I would buy the Kirby's Dream Buffet, play a few rounds of it and put it down and never pick it back up, mm-hmm. you know, yep. as compared to like other free stuff that are like other multiplayer stuff that Nintendo's put out. Like I dug Tetris 99, Mario 35 was good, you know. There were,
yeah, it is an interesting cost model where it's like they're just doing the Fortnite approach where it's like, well, we're gonna make a bunch of money off of cosmetics, and so we need a sufficient player base, so it makes sense to make it free, but whatever.
I feel like this type of game also requires a certain, you know, threshold of people that are just kind of, you know, online to have fun. This is kind of what they do, and those people are not playing on Switch.
Right. Yeah, I think if you're like playing with friends, well, I mean, it could be different things. Like, if maybe for a younger crowd, Switch could be a viable way to do multiplayer. But yeah, like this still is a good game if you're playing with like friends on PC or something. This is definitely an option, you know, up there with like Left 4 Dead or something like that as far as an enjoyable way to pass time. But anyway, I'm gonna move on. It's an old game. I played a game that I have not played before that's a little bit newer. I played Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. I can't remember. Did anyone else play this on the podcast?
No, I haven't touched it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't gotten a chance yet.
So it's made by the people who made the Scott Pilgrim game, and it's basically trying to capture the old arcade feel of like the old Ninja Turtles games, like Turtles in Time.
Okay.
So we played with four players. I'm not sure where it maxes out at. You might be able to play more since we had more character options. But it's like old school arcade game. It's like the old Simpsons games or anything like that, where it's, you have a screen, or like the old X-Men Konami game.
Yeah.
If anyone remembers this. It's like that. You have a screen, there's a bunch of people come on it, you beat them up. They have a complicated control scheme, or more than I was surprised by, I guess. And I'm not sure how to best, I don't know what the best way to go about trying to teach people that on an arcade. The way it does it is it just shows you like 20 different slides of the different like moves that you can do.
it's like a fighting game. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, they tried to do something. So I appreciate that. At least you're not going to be able to retain all of them, but you can at least look and be like, all right, mash this four times. That'll do something. Oh, mash these two at the same time. That might do something interesting. Okay. I'll remember those and I'll go from there. And that's kind of basically how it goes is, you know, like while you're playing, you might try some more elaborate things, but you honestly don't need to know all the controls to make it through the game. We made it to the final boss just on that brief tutorial our first time through. So, you know, you don't have to master it right away. Still have fun with it. There's two different modes too. There's the arcade mode is the one that we played. And then there's, I don't know if it's like a story mode or something else. And we didn't play it, so I don't know how it's differentiated from the arcade mode. But there's a regular, I think, story mode that you can play as well. Arcade mode's pretty fun. You're just button mashing everything. The way they do specials, so unlike like X-Men, the arcade game, where it's like you just have like two and then you're done, you basically charge up your specials by attacking and killing people. Basically, the common flow is every enemy will have some sort of moveset and basically some sort of way to attack and hurt you. For example, some are these like ninjas that come from the top and they just spawn with like a downwards attack. So you basically need to get out of the way, otherwise you'll take damage. If you take enough damage to where you would quote unquote die, you have a countdown timer like from 10 seconds. Anybody can go next to you and feed you pizza to revive you.
Of course.
If anybody like were to attack them while they're doing that, it breaks and then the timer keeps down ticking. If you're feeding them pizza, the timer stops. Okay. So there's this kind of like pressured moment where it's like, all right, let's try and revive this person before they die. If they die, it costs them a life, and then there's a fixed number of lives you have before you permadie on the run. We did not beat the final boss. I was the last person left alive, so I was like soloing against the final boss, which is very stress inducing. especially after being very reliant on it being 4v1 when it comes to boss battles. Uh-huh. But yeah, overall, if you're looking for like one of those old school arcade experiences, this is a really good representation of that. And it's definitely fun to play with people in the same room. I'm not sure how it plays online. or if that translates, but yeah.
It seems like one that I would want to play with people around, you know, for the, yeah. For the cheering, you know, that,
yeah.
Kind of ambience, energy there.
Yeah. And they show you two stats at the end of every level that you can kind of like get competitive over. One is the total number of enemies you killed. And the second one is the highest streak that anyone achieved, which is most number of hits without getting hit yourself.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's a fun, cute little game. There were a few bugs with like characters bugging out when they like did a down attack, but overall it's pretty minor. It played pretty well. Nothing too debilitating there. Anyway, I'm going to move on from that to the last game that I got, which is a new one. Okay. I started playing a game called Timberborn. I think we've referenced it a few times on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's Timberborn. Yeah, this is Frostpunk, but with beavers.
Yeah. And I did
Beaverpunk.
I didn't realize the Frostpunk angle of this game until I started playing it. I knew it was like kind of like a civilization builder type thing. It is very close to Frostpunk, but it's just like a mirrored version of it where things get really hot instead of it getting really cold. So I've only gone through the tutorial and I've done that maybe like two or three times because my beavers have kept dying. So maybe in that sense, it's like Frostpunk as well. But But in the tutorial, it basically gives you the basics mechanics that you're playing around with. You basically have housing to house your beavers and grow the population. You have a food mechanic, a water mechanic, and a logging mechanic are kind of like the three main resources. The beavers need food and water to be kept alive. They need housing to be happier and to repopulate, increase their population. They can
freaky out on Maine.
Yeah, pretty much. They just sleep in the moonlight by themselves, I guess. If they don't have a home.
Forever alone.
Yeah. And then there's a power mechanic that comes into play after all those base things. So by the way, timber, cutting down logs or whatever is essential because you need that to build any of the structures in the game.
But you're also managing forests too.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, timber is kind of a slowly repopulating resource. So eventually you need to build houses where you can plant trees so that they grow quicker than what they would naturally repopulating. Yeah. But that requires like a seeding building, which requires a specific type, not just regular logs, but more like crafted logs, like 2x4 type stuff. And you get those through powered buildings, like buildings that require electricity. And you get electricity by making dams and water wheels and stuff like that.
And those probably redirect the water, and you have to plan for that with your building.
Yeah, and you can have droughts with the weather so that your power goes down. There's an alternative to this. There's manual power that you can have by having beavers just run on these like hamster wheels, essentially.
Oh, that's degrading.
Yeah, but it's it's like cross speciesing it, but that's not as efficient, and that's kind of like a last ditch effort. There are like batteries and stuff where you can try and retain power, the same way that there's like vats for water and storage for logs and food, so that you can try and build like a supply of this for the harder times when there's droughts. While there's droughts, basically you kind of have a freeze on your resources, trees that you planted could get burned out, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of setbacks. So hopefully, you have enough resources to survive that. Like Frostpunk, there's like a forecast system where it'll alert you when there's a drought coming. And it'll basically be like, hey, in 2 days, there's going to be a drought, like figure stuff out. And so one of the cool things is any sort of construction site and any sort of functional building you have has like a priority that you can click on it. And it's basically five different levels, like up arrow, double up arrow, down arrow, double down arrow, or neutral. So that in situations like the drought coming, you can say, okay, I'm going to go to the water pumps and like highly prioritize all that stuff. And I'm going to deprioritize any of these like construction buildings that we're working on right now. So we can build up like a resource reserve. Other than that, the beavers act autonomously the same way that the individuals in Frostpunk do. You're kind of operating at this higher level where you're just giving them tasks to do and they'll figure out how to do them themselves.
Yeah.
Um, So yeah. So far plays pretty good. I'm super early in it still though, so I can't really comment on like how deep the mechanics go or where it goes from there. So I probably still need to play it some more before I give any sort of evaluation or opinion on it. So far it's at least cute.
Based on the sound of this, when this comes out of early access, my family is going to start having the county come by and do wellness checks on me.
Well, at least we'll have our weekly check-in. So that'll, and one interesting thing they had to do too, is they have factions that you can be at the beginning of the runs. So they differentiate what faction of beaver you are, and that you can differentiate what terrain you're starting on. The faction so far, there's only two that I've seen so far. And the only differentiation between them is one exploits the land for science, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And, the other one is more works with the land and tries to be like naturalist and have it be replenished. So they have unique buildings based on their race. So like the one that replants trees, I believe, is unique to the first faction, the nice faction. But that one, I think to unlock it, you need to get their like happiness level to a certain degree that I haven't gotten to. So I haven't unlocked that yet to see what it's like.
It's a little bit like, Surviving Mars has like different corporations that you start as. That has similar kind of feel to it. Just bringing in another colony builder survival game to throw on top of there.
Yeah. Yep.
It sounds badass to me. I'm happy that one of us is playing it, and I'm happy that it's not me at first.
I don't want to heap so much praise on it. It's interesting so far, but I'm not. I don't want to make it seem like everyone should go out and buy it or anything like that. I'm not embracing it or anything yet. So
yeah, no,
but it's just interesting so far.
It sounds like a lot of the right pieces are there.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. I'm laughing at the picture you chose, Dennis. what's the question that you asked the nice people, Dennis?
So I asked them to think of a favorite video game franchise and asked what is one change to that franchise that would make you drop it like a sack of bricks. Take as read that you know the creators being hateful in some way would get you to walk away. That one is a layup. But what are some other things that would get you to just turn your back on a franchise?
Yeah, I'll start with Sean here, who says Metal Gear Solid. I would drop the series if it had a game with an unfinished story or which makes you replay missions with modifiers. Oh wait, it unfortunately happened and is called Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Snake.
I would recommend people listen to the Watch Out for Fireballs episodes about Metal Gear Solid 5, but not if you like unconditionally love that game or Hideo Kojima.
I unconditionally love half of that game.
we don't have it doesn't hold up. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says any franchise that goes totally multiplayer. I don't mind an entry or a DLC that's multiplayer only, but I have no time or interest to play a totally multiplayer only series.
Makes sense. Yeah.
What you like?
Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says Hitman, the best overall series of last generation of consoles, in my honest opinion.
Agreed.
If it went to a truly open world, like an Ubisoft title, I'd walk. Those games are so well precisely because of the scripted moments and then allowing you the freedom to do anything within the rich levels they've built.
Yep. Makes sense. Yeah, no, that would suck. Like Hitman operates on the perfect scale, which is large levels, but very intricate. Yeah. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, any franchise with no co-op or main solo story. Also, any franchise that would become pay to win. Hell no.
Yeah.
Monetization is another way to you know, ruin pretty much anything.
Yeah. Make it exploitative. Yeah. Callum says, adding pay real money loot systems. No, thank you. Ugh. David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, procedurally generated Dark Souls. Proc-gen Dark Souls misses the point so hard, I would almost expect it to be Frog Fractions 4 in disguise. Which is weird to me, because I love the Chalice Dungeons, although I feel like that had a non-proc-gen part to kind of give it context.
There were, I mean, the ones with story content were static. They were the same. Mm. It was the root dungeons, which were randomly generated. I think that Ricky's saying, like, oh, if Dark Souls went the way of Remnant from the Ashes, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, like, obviously lots of people didn't like the Chalice Dungeon, so I'm not saying that's, like, a wrong thing. It's just interesting to me that, like, there actually was a Dark Souls that tried that.
Uh-huh, and they haven't tried it again.
Yeah, you're allowed to try anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's a,
well, you know. Except for maybe this last thing.
Yeah, Ben, what does Tyler say?
This butts up against my answer, but Tyler says, any franchise plus NFTs equals not for Tyler.
I like that.
I was going to use my real-life example of Storybook Brawl, which I dropped like a hot sack of potatoes. Is that an analogy? We'll say that's an analogy. As soon as they partnered with an NFT company.
So. did they back off of that, or was it too late?
Nope.
No, I think it's like they're, you know, the NFT company owns them now. So
they cannot back out of selling their company to them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, I kind of did mine with Rocksmith, like go back and listen to that 20 minutes where I just spewed bile about it. So I'll go ahead and forego mine. David, how about you?
I'd say going free to play, implementing Battle Royale, and, anytime a game company says that, their game is non-political.
Oh yeah.
That's a pretty good one, yeah.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's kind of like when people say they're moderate on dating apps. No. I know what that means. I know what that means.
Yeah. No, I would like that. I would like that to mean what you think it means. Mm-hmm. But actually, it just means you're afraid to call yourself a Republican. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. That took me to a bad spot.
It means you have some shame, but not enough to get you to change.
Did you have anything else besides NFTs, Ben?
No. Yeah. Do I need anything else besides
NFTs? No,
no. No, I mean, NFTs are all you need. They're the way of the future, man.
Well, Ethereum moved to a proof of proof of stake model, so everything's solved. It's not a scam anymore, guys.
Yeah,
sorry, I had to mute because I was violently vomiting.
They have one less insurmountable problem now. Time to buy in.
Buy the dip. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, the Jack series of games is one of my favorite franchises, and not that they're doing any new games for that, but in playing back through them recently, I realized there's a lot more horny in those games than I remembered.
Okay.
So I feel like any game starting to go too far down the horny side, especially with like characters and stuff that they weren't explicitly starting there, is tough.
How does that play with Devil May Cry for you?
Devil May Cry started there, so that's
okay.
Fine.
There we go. Okay.
Also, I feel like. I know. I'm not sure I could call Devil May Cry horny. It's more just awkward.
Oh, okay.
It's like someone with no concept of sex discovered the BDSM look and decided it was pretty rad.
Okay.
But no, like specifically, like, you know, Jack and Daxter, the first game is has such strong art design and everything, and then you start Jack 2 and it's like, you know, everyone in this brave new world is definitely fucks as well. So,
well, that's a shame.
Yeah, and you know, so that is probably the case of as far as you could go, and I'll stick with the series.
Yeah,
at least that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
I mean, there it is. If they decide to release another one, it must be that horny, but no hornier.
Yes.
Reach the horny ceiling.
I was going to say something that was explicitly going to be a title, which is a maximum horny guarantee, but the horny ceiling is good enough.
See, I'm just on team. Nah, there's no maximum horny. Just go for it.
That's what the cosplay is for.
True.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, folks, for writing in and for participating. If you would like to throw in on these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, like the page, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. We appreciate it. And thank you, Dennis, for posting.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us or otherwise noteworthy. Greta the cat understands that the show is about to wrap up. She is rubbing up against my ankles. So that is funny because
Get him, girl. She knows.
Start out here, just in the order that these were posted. hey, David, what's going on in the wild world of sim games?
Yeah, so someone released a game called Sim Nimby, which you start up and appears to be a clone of the old Sim City, the original Sim City, but then you click to build something and you're presented with, oh no, you can't build. Here's a excuse from one of your constituents.
The example in the image on motherboard is very funny. The quote is, "Live, laugh, love showing up at these town halls and stopping your building." Or can't build in Nimbyville. That is quite good.
Yeah. So, as you might imagine, you cannot build at all. like it's kind of a joke game. It has 54 different NIMBY slogans. So some of them they highlight are, "The only thing urban I want to see in my neighborhood is Keith Urban." And "Apartment buildings cause crime. Where do you think the people who killed Batman's parents live?"
The next two are fucking brutal, which are, "This is a nice neighborhood." Oh, or "Public transport, we transport the public here."
Yeah, probably the most, like, you said the loud part out loud is housing. Surely there must be other ways to deal with the unhoused.
They would not call them unhoused.
Yeah,
that is not the word that they would use. That is a sensitive term.
Oh Lord!
Oh fuck! That is really funny. By which I mean, a depressing reminder. It's not even just a city thing. We got a years long campaign of NIMBYs against wind farms out here.
See, we have anti-NIMBYism here, where there's constantly construction and stuff. It's just always in the place where there was previously Section 8 housing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we need parking lots, so. Jesus, I don't actually feel that way. I'm going to go on to something only slightly less depressing. This is more of a vibe check for everybody in the room here. Over this past weekend, possibly the biggest data leak in video game history has happened. By leak, I mean it was revealed to be a hack. Rockstar has acknowledged that, yeah, the information that came out about Grand Theft Auto 6 is indeed genuine. But there was just a ton of gameplay videos, information, documents, code, that was published over the weekend. which is not good for anybody. Because as much as people might say, like, yeah, transparency is cool, like, whatever. Also, there's no context for this stuff. And this is probably going to delay the game and cause a studio that already has really rough labor practices a lot of heartache and a lot of this is going to fall on people who are already had a lot of pressure on them to deal with this. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, this is something I had a hard time understanding. Like, I have a hard time understanding why devs are so, like, upset about it, or, like, why this is such, like, a setback. Like, how does this, like, inhibit their ability to continue working on it? Like, is anybody judging?
The two things I've heard is, one, people are dumb and are looking at, like, super early stage stuff and being like, oh, this game is shit. It's like, yeah, it's barely done.
There's a ton of that. There have been death threats about it, and there's been, you know, calls to boycott, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And then the other thing is the threat, and maybe it's been made good on by this point, but the threat to release all the source code.
Yeah, there's also that. Basically anything proprietary that may come out because of this would effectively need to be redone. This is based on what I have seen from, like, developer threads saying, like, we had a breach that wasn't even, you know, 1/10 of this, and it created months of work. So
I guess I still don't understand that. It's like, why do they need to recode it even if it's made public, like the code that's leaked?
For, like, IP reasons, for exploit reasons, stuff like that is what I saw. But I also didn't internalize all of it. I'm just kind of taking it on trust that they are representing the truth. Yeah.
I do kind of, again, not advocating that this is a cool thing to do or anything, but I do kind of appreciate the irony of GTA being the victim of a heist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, there's also just been a ton of reactions from people not understanding that games, like even large games with a lot of money behind them, look like garbage up until the polish phase, you know, stuff like that. Context.
One of the screenshots that was leaked looked amazing. Like, I thought it was an actual photograph of a person, but it was like in-game image. I haven't seen any of the gameplay videos though.
So yeah. I feel like my overall take on this though is, after having played GTA Online, I didn't have any hopes for this game not being super exploitative anyways, so...
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're the one who played it. I hadn't. It's just, I don't know. I don't think it's anything this team needed. So,
yeah, again, not to actually advocate for hacking, but it's like, hack the multiplayer games so that they cancel that and keep making single player games.
Hey, there's an idea.
I'd appreciate that. But.
Yeah, no, I can get behind that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was my story. Let's see here. Ben, what's happening in the world of Resident Evil?
Yeah, so this was something I didn't really know about before this article came out, but there's a DLC coming out in October 28th for Resident Evil Village. It kind of has a couple different things on it. One of the main things is there's a DLC called Winter's Expansion, which is featuring around the character Rose, who's the daughter of, is it Ethan is the main character?
Yeah, Ethan and Mia. Yeah.
Yeah, in Resident Evil Village and the previous game. But the news item about this is that this will be the last kind of foray into the Winter storyline in Resident Evil. So whatever the next game in the series is will be about something different.
That's very funny, because they did basically the same thing with Resident Evil 7. Like, the entire game was, it felt like it was setting up for Lucas, the oldest son of the family, to be the kind of like a new Wesker kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And then he was dispatched with unceremoniously in the DLC.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like the stuff with Rose was going to be a sequel, and kind of seems like not the case. Weird.
Yeah. Huh. Well, they'll figure something out.
Yeah. No, it's the series prints money.
They'll figure some game that has IX in the title for Resident Evil 9.
I'm just hoping they get back to making action games.
Who knows? They're trending in that direction from 7 to 8. So
I feel like this joke has been made before, but they should do Resident Evil 6, but spell it S-I-X and highlight the I-X because it's Resident Evil 9, just a remake of Resident Evil 6.
That would be incredibly funny, and it would also, I think, make the entire world explode. I think that would be only make five people happy, and all of them are affiliated with this network.
So, Jala and the four people she co-ops the game with. Yeah.
I know that there are three. I know it's me, Jala, and Gary. Gary's a defender as well. It's funny because we were just talking about this. And I know David is
definitely the height of the series.
Yeah, so there's at least four, and there's probably somebody else. I think maybe Allison really enjoys it. It's we would be the sole locus for that product, and that is five copies. I don't know that that's gonna keep the studio afloat.
So, but going back to Winter's Expansion, I guess one of the other things that they're adding with this DLC is they're adding to the Mercenaries mode, mm-hmm. and you can play as Chris Redfield, Heisenberg, or Lady Dimitrescu. I don't know how to pronounce
her. Dimitrescu. They say it the wrong way in there. Dimitrescu.
Yeah. So yeah, that sounds like a possibly cool DLC if you're a fan of the Village entry.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to play it.
This is a complete tangent, but the one of my favorite things from Con this year was realizing that the Lady Dimitrescu or whatever cosplay is actually super, super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Just white, a lot of people, it's just white sun hat, white dress.
Uh-huh. Probably modified Freddy Krueger hands.
Usually, but I mean, even if you don't have that, you know, people usually get the idea.
Nice. Cool. Round us out. Dennis, what are they doing with Portal?
Yeah, I guess this is the corollary to the bigger story, which is RTX announced their new graphics card. The RTX, 4080, something like that?
Yeah, NVIDIA GeForce RTX 4080, 4090.
Yeah.
I think the base price on the 4090 is $1,500.
Yeah. This is a modest vacation or a graphics card. Yes. But you know, one of the cool things that came out of it was they are going to redo Portal with ray tracing. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, graphical upgrades are nice, but with Portal, the idea of leveraging ray tracing in situations that are not physically possible is really interesting to me. So you can literally see the light shining through the portals and like illuminating the floors in different ways. Everything has a little bit more glowiness to it.
Yeah.
And I know that once people get their hands on this game, they're instantly going to see like, all right, how far can I get this ray to go and still trace? it'll be really interesting because if I remember in the original Portal games, it wasn't too far. In fact, it might have been like through the first portal that you stopped seeing additional windows. Am I remembering that right?
It was in the settings of the game where you could pick how many levels deep to go. Ah,
there it is. Yeah. I'm very intrigued to see, you know, what the limits of this new graphic card are, and you know how many portals deep we can get.
My inclination was to scoff at this because I don't think of Portal as being an especially visually demanding game. Even at the time, it was kind of very clearly not a student project, but like they had just hired people in off of a student project. Reused test chamber kind of stuff. But then you mentioned the portals, and I thought about the complications with ray tracing, and then my nose started bleeding.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
I take back my initial. I both cop to and take back my initial instinct of scoffing at this.
Yeah, I mean, technically, if light can move through the portals, that would violate thermodynamics, right?
I mean,
sure.
Yeah, why not? you can just simulate thermodynamics being being broken. But
I can't tell you you're wrong.
Yeah, no, I don't know enough. I couldn't tell you.
Guess we'll have to play the game to find out, huh?
Yeah.
But it is, like, you know, you realize when you start watching the ray tracing trailer, just, you know, how many instances there are of light showing up in weird places, and like you said, Portal is not the game that I would have pegged for like really needing ray tracing. Mm-hmm. But seeing it in motion specifically makes me realize like, oh my God, this, like, it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
So yeah, very cool. I'm not shelling out $1,600 to play it.
No.
But I will watch the videos, showing people who did.
I mean, I have a graphics card from 2019, I think, and it does. It's an RTX. Like, it wasn't a crazy expensive one. I got the budget one, but like this says any RTX or any anything with NVIDIA's ray tracing will be able to run this. So I might actually be able to get a version of this to work.
Oh, sweet!
Yeah,
you can just go, you know, one or two portals deep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I feel like, though, I've got an even better idea than this, which is make a new Portal game.
That's clearly impossible. So
I was going to say do Portal 2 with this technology.
Oh, that would be crazy.
Kind of above board. I didn't talk about this. I replayed Portal 1 and Portal 2 this last week. Just on a whim or whatever. But Portal 2 is a far superior game to Portal 1. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Striking.
Would it be harder to do ray tracing in? I'm actually.
I don't know.
I would say yeah, because like the facility is really decayed, and like
you end up with
those long sight lines of just the cavernous.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are a little bit more, let's say, the modularity is retained in the original, let's say. Because the apocalypse hadn't happened that long ago in this one. Yeah. Let me see here. Kind of related to that, just about Valve stuff being modified for visuals. I think over this weekend or sometime this week, a VR patch was put out for Half-Life 2, like fully playing Half-Life 2 in VR, which sounds amazing to me.
All right.
Until I remember, what is it? Route Canal? Maybe motion sick, you know, just on a flat screen.
Presumably, I imagine they would add like the VR controls that they have in like Half-Life Alyx, where you can like ping places to bounce to. But yeah, that would sound miserable otherwise.
Yeah, I think they would do a full Alyx. Oh, also, we just wait. Let me double check. Yeah, and everybody's gonna, you know. I'm going to cut that out. It'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drop edit marker.
Oh, yeah. No. They're there. We're on marker 20 because of all the all the hiccups on the back end here.
Ooh.
Oh, cool. Let me see here. That was all. How do we feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 429. Really appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to help us out, you can leave a rating or review. You can subscribe. If you're just listening to one episode, go ahead and subscribe. You can go to Patreon, kick us a few bucks. That gets you bonus content for other shows and things like that. And most of all, tell your friends and come back next week. All of that is good stuff. Anybody have anything they want to plug, update on, anything like that?
I can't remember if I said this last week or not. I will be at Sin City Con.
Oh, nice.
On October, I want to say 8th. So the Saturday of that weekend.
Is that in Vegas or is that in Cincinnati?
No, that is CIN City Con.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Is that with Foreteller again? Or are you doing your own?
No. I got my own spot.
Oh, cool.
Right on like the corner of an intersection though. So hopefully lots of traffic.
Neat.
And if anyone's in the area and going to Sin City Con or interested in checking it out, I will be there on Saturday.
Yeah.
October 8th.
Tell him hi. Dennis is a very nice man. Yeah.
Unless you get to me before my coffee and then I'll yell at you. That's not the thing.
That's weird. I didn't realize you were a Kathy person. oh, man. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. All right, I have three. Mm-hmm. Santa water is peppermint schnapps.
That's good.
A hot sack of potatoes. And the horny ceiling.
Nice.
I have two. I have the shape is invisible. And five people like it all on this network.
On this network. Okay.
We have a wide array of titles this week.
Yeah.
I have three. I've got Rocksmith Paper Scissors.
Okay.
I had the horny ceiling, but I styled it as what came immediately before, which is that horny, but no hornier. Okay. And then I have Portals Deep.
Ooh, yeah. Let's see here. And Ben, what you got?
I had a subset of viewers in both entries and in titles. I just had Santa Water and Horny Ceiling.
Okay. I like Santa Water as peppermint shops.
Yeah, I can go with that.
I'm a fan of Santa Water.
Cool. All right. It is decided.